You are Locked On Orioles, your daily podcast on the Baltimore Orioles, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey guys, welcome to Locked On Orioles, your place for birds, news, and analysis from the clubhouse to the warehouse and beyond. It's all O's all the time. I'm your host, Justin McGuire. I'm a veteran baseball journalist who spent 3 years as Major League Baseball editor for Sporting News. I also host a podcast called Baseball by the Book, in which I interview authors of baseball books past and present. You should check that out on Apple Podcasts and other places where podcasts are available. You can follow me on Twitter, at JMcGuireMLB. Today we're joined by RJ Anderson, who recently wrote the Orioles preview for CBSSports.com. We'll get to that in just a minute. First, I wanted to let everybody know that we are now available on Google Play. So if that's your preferred podcast provider, you can now subscribe and leave a review and all that stuff there. And of course, as always, we're available on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and at LockedOnOrioles.com. You can follow us on Twitter. Our handle is at LockedOnOrioles. And we always welcome emails, LockedOnOrioles@gmail.com. You can send us ideas for guests, for topics, mailbag questions. That's also the place to contact us if you're interested in advertising on Locked On Orioles. Advertising on Locked On Orioles is a good way to reach a sophisticated, digital-savvy baseball audience. So please get in touch. Okay, let's get on to our conversation with RJ Anderson, who's an MLB writer for CBSSports.com. Just so you know, this conversation was recorded a couple days ago before news of the Alex Cobb signing. So just keep that in mind as you're listening to it. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Locked On Orioles. We're joined now by RJ Anderson. He's an MLB writer for CBSSports.com. And this week he wrote the Orioles preview for the website. So we want to talk to him a little bit about the 2018 Orioles and what he sees in store for the team. RJ, we've been talking about the rotation a lot on this podcast and the weakness of the rotation. We've been talking a lot about the uncertainty facing the Orioles after 2018 with so many free agents and with Buck Showalter and Dan Duquette having their contracts run out. So I wanted to just switch the script a little bit and start out by asking you, what do you think are going to be the strengths of the Orioles in 2018? What should fans be excited about?
Well, I would start by saying that I think Showalter himself is a strength for the Orioles. I think highly of him as a manager, and I think he's one of the better managers in baseball. So I think I would start there when we're talking about the strengths of this team. From there, I think you have to talk a little bit about the infield defense. You know, Manny Machado is obviously an all-world defender at third base, should probably be pretty good at shortstop. And, you know, everybody knows about Jonathan Scope's big arm. And, you know, Tim Beckham, if he's just around average, that's pretty good defensive infield. And then I think you're going to see the Orioles get a couple of these, a couple of surprise overperformers, so to speak, because, you know, nobody's really talking about Colby Rasmus as an addition. And when he played with the Rays last season, he was very good, and he has a track record of being a pretty useful platoon outfielder. So I think that was a smart addition that's kind of flown under the radar. And the Orioles in general have a track record of finding those types. You know, Trey Mancini kind of came out of nowhere last season. Obviously, they've had success with guys like Chris Davis in the past. And, you know, Danny Valencia, another guy who could easily be useful in a platoon. And then, you know, we'll see what Anthony Santander can do. But I think those are the main strengths when you look at this roster. And just to re-sum them back up, it would be Showalter, their infield defense. And then whether you want to credit this to Showalter, Duquette, Luck, or a combination thereof, their ability to unearth unheralded contributors.
Right. And of course, I think one of the other things we got to look at is the fact that this team could potentially, hit a lot of homers again. That's something they seem to do a lot. And there's throughout the lineup, you have guys with power. And we know, Manny Machado's having a great spring training and he could be due for a big year. Jonathan Scope hit very well last year. Chris Davis, Mark Trumbo, you know, we both had down years last year. And, you know, certainly possible both of them bounce back, or at least one of them bounces back in some way. So, yeah, I think that's something to look at, too. Let's talk about the bullpen a little bit, because that has been a strength for the Orioles under Buck Showalter most years. We know Zach Britton is going to start the year on the DL, and we're not sure exactly when he's coming back or how effective he'll be. And that leaves Brad Brock as the closer until then, presumably. Do you see the bullpen as being a strength this year?
It's always a strength for the Showalter-Duquette era Orioles. That said, you know, obviously not having Britton for a full season and not really knowing what he'll bring to the table when he returns does kind of leave the rest of the staff in doubt. You know, Brock, he's a good reliever. Obviously, he's going to be a free agent at the end of the season as well. I really like Givens. I think he has, you know, a dynamic arm. Wouldn't be surprised if he's, you know, I think he had like a 158 ERA plus last season. Wouldn't be surprised if he does that again. Richard Blyer kind of came out of nowhere, and he's an odd profile, isn't he? You know, he's an older guy who doesn't really throw hard, doesn't really miss many bats, but to his credit, he was able to get lefties and righties out last season, gets a lot of ground balls because of his sinker and the spin it produces. So I don't quite know if he'll be as good as he was last season from a superficial sense, but who knows? And, you know, from there you have guys like O'Day and Hart. I used to really like Miguel Castro, and I don't know what they quite intend to do with him, but I thought Miguel Castro, when I first saw him years and years ago in spring training with the Blue Jays, was going to be a pretty good big league pitcher. And, you know, last season he got some shot, he got some burn, I should say. And, you know, the results weren't, you know, eye-popping or anything, but it wouldn't surprise me if he's effective. And then, you know, the Orioles have a few of these Rule 5 types, Cortez Jr., Araujo. I believe they also still have Mesa Jr. around. So I don't know if any of those guys is going to be, you know, league average or better reliever, but it wouldn't surprise me because, again, you know, Duquette has a history – I should say Duquette and Showalter have a history of kind of unearthing these guys who we didn't really expect to contribute but nonetheless found a way to. And – I would also say that I think the bullpen has to be a strength for this team if they want to be serious about competing, because I have a lot of questions about that rotation, and I'm sure that's where we're heading next. But yeah, I think the bullpen on paper has a chance to be at least average and perhaps a little bit more depending on some of those up in the air cases I just mentioned.
Right. Well, you said, you know, you have some questions about the bullpen or about the starting rotation. My first reaction is you and me both, brother. and that's, like I said, I've been doing this podcast for about a month, and I think pretty much every episode we've gotten around to at some point question, you know, concerns about the rotation. So it's kind of the common theme for the Orioles for this going into this year. So again, before we get into why it's such a question mark, let's talk again about potential strengths. We know that Bundy and Gausman are at the top of the rotation. What do you think the Orioles can realistically expect from those two, who are the, you know, kind of the hard to believe, but they're kind of the most proven guys in the rotation at this point in some sense?
Yeah, and, you know, to their credit, both of them have had stretches where they looked like they were taking that next step and becoming, if not frontline starters, at least well above average starters. And then, you know, Bundy kind of ended last season on a sour note, and Gausman's been up and down throughout his career and gets hit around a little bit too much for someone with his stuff. I don't know if this is going to be the year where either of them break out, but I'll say that at least you can kind of count on these guys to be mid-rotation starters. And that's like saying, you know, they're a staff ace on this club. You know, the Orioles, when they were good a few years ago, it was always winning with a rotation full of number four starters. So if Bundy and or Gausman can give them number three, maybe even soft number two production, they're in a good place, because the rest of the rotation is where things get a little, let's say, dicey.
Yeah, I think that's the kind way of putting it. So Andrew Cashner, I mean, we know that his numbers last year at least superficially looked good, but they were really soft underneath. You know, the analytics show that he really wasn't as effective as his ERA would suggest, for instance. What should the Orioles expect from Andrew Cashner realistically this year?
That's a great question, because I really don't know. You're right that, you know, his ERA was really good, but he didn't really miss bats, and he's never really been an extreme ground ball guy. And I don't know if they're going to have him go out there and maybe lean into his cutter slash slider more, because last season when that pitch was put into play, about 70% went on the ground. So maybe the plan here is to have him lean into that ground ball getting tendency more often, which would change the perception of him, I think, because you either have to get ground balls or you have to get strikeouts. And if you don't do either, then you really are just trying to live off that weak air contact. And when you're in a ballpark like Camden, when you're in the American League East facing the Yankees, the Red Sox now, even the Rays, you know, they're going to have some guys who hit some home runs. It's not a great situation to be in. So I'm not quite sure what to expect of him. Years ago, I was a big fan of Cashner. He's changed a little bit since then. And it just depends on what they instruct him to do and what he feels comfortable doing. Because, again, I wouldn't mind seeing him lean into that ground ball pitch and try to become more of a ground ball heavy pitcher. But whether that's in the cards or not is beyond my pay level at this point.
All right. So in your preview, you mentioned that I think Pecota projects the Orioles at 70 wins. I think Fangraphs has it at 75, and that seems to be in keeping with all the projections that I've seen, both the the computer-based ones and just the sort of the old-school, you know, writers predicting how many games are going to win. You know, 70 to 75, 70 to 74, somewhere in there seems to be what people are predicting. Does that seem realistic to you?
Yeah, although I would know, and I say this as someone who is always low on the Orioles because I tend to look for teams with more stable starting rotations, and I don't always buy into the bullpen over rotation approach, that I think projection systems have that same issue. And, you know, Pecota always was low on the Royals of yesteryear. You know, they're always low on the Orioles of yesteryear because the algorithm just doesn't do a good job of, not just the algorithm, but the people who set the depth charts that feed the algorithm don't really do a good job of being able to leverage innings the way these teams can. So, you know, Buck Showalter, if it's a one-run game, he's going to manage it differently than if it were a three-run game. But you can't go in there and say, okay, the top relievers are going to get, like, you know, 80% or whatever of the high-leverage innings, whereas they're going to get X percent of the low-leverage innings or whatever. You know, there's no – I guess what I'm saying is there's no way to adjust for the leverage aspect, and that makes a huge difference when you're really, you know, built around the idea of taking advantage of your high leverage situations. That said, this Orioles team's going to need, you know, they're going to need some help in order to break the 500 mark. And that doesn't mean it's impossible. It just means, you know, the back of the rotation with Tillman and Wright, that's very iffy to me. They're already dealing with some injuries to Trumbo and, you know, Britton. And I believe even Chris Davis is a little dinged up now. I don't know if he's ready for opening day or not, but you know, those issues are in play. And I will say, you know, the Orioles have a chance to add a little talent internally during the season, whether it's, you know, I was always surprised that Pedro Alvarez hasn't gotten another look in the majors. But even beyond him, they have some prospects on the way like Austin Hayes and even some arms that could potentially factor into the rotation or bullpen and fill in some of the weak spots. You know, Tanner Scott, Chris Lee, maybe Hunter Harvey if he stays healthy. I don't know. Who knows with that guy? But you know, there's a chance for internal improvement here, and I think Duquette has shown in the past, and maybe it's not Duquette, maybe it's Peter Angelis, but they've shown in the past they're willing to go out there and make additions at the deadline, even when the odds are stacked against them. So if I were betting one way or the other, I would say they're probably going to be on the higher end of their projections just because their never-say-die attitude and their ability to, you know, slot in other options as the season progresses. But I'm not sure this is a playoff caliber team, and I just did the season picks for CBS last night, and I had them in fourth place in the American League East, and I could maybe see third place because I think the Blue Jays are more likely to tear things down if the season doesn't progress as they would like. But beyond that, it's hard to see this team really being a serious contender this season, barring a lot of luck and good fortune.
All right. Well, assuming that things do go that way, like you're, you know, most of us are thinking that this is probably not a playoff team. Say we get to the All-Star break, just beyond the All-Star break, they're, you know, a significant number of games out in the American League East. They're not really in a, you know, good position in the wild card race, even though, you know, how it goes. You can be at 500 and look like you're contending for the wild card. I mean, these days. But say they're in a position where it's just realistically they know this is not going to happen. Do you see them moving Machado, Jones, these guys at the deadline? This is something the Orioles have been hesitant to do in the past. But if they are facing a situation where it's clear they're not going to contend, do you see it happening?
That's a good question. And I guess the cop-out answer is it just depends on what they're being offered. Because obviously they shopped around Machado a little bit this winter, didn't find a package to their liking. And I don't know if it had to do with the packages out there or just the fact that they wanted to take one more shot at it. But, you know, you look at some of the other packages tossed about in other trades, you know, Giancarlo Stanton had the big contract attached to him, so it's hard to compare one-to-one there. And, you know, Marcell Ozuna had multiple seasons of team control remaining. Same with Yelich, who also had a sweet team-friendly deal. So I don't know what teams would offer for a half season of Machado, and I don't know if the Orioles would deem it worth giving up on the draft pick compensation and, you know, trying to make the most of what remains of the season. My guess is that Machado would be the least likely to go, my guess is that Machado would be the most likely to go because I'm not sure how the Orioles value first round picks. I don't, you know, they're one of those teams who, and this might be me misreading their situation or their philosophy or what have you, but they seem to like to get professional ball players instead of amateurs. And, you know, you see it with some of their international bonus pool trades. They don't seem interested in signing, you know, the 16 and 17 year olds so much as going out there and perhaps acquiring, you know, an arm or two who's maybe in double A and maybe not on that team's radar just yet, or, you know, maybe doesn't really fit the profile and might be a little undervalued in the Orioles' opinion. So it wouldn't surprise me if they did forego the draft pick compensation in order to trade these guys. I just don't know if they're actually going to commit to that because, like you mentioned, this is not a team that really is or really has shown a tendency or willingness to fold their cards no matter where they are in the standings. So if I had to guess one way or the other, I would say they probably won't trade them. But if they were open for business, I think Machado would probably go.
Yeah, and I think it's going to depend to some degree. I talked about some, I forget who it was, but on the podcast a few weeks ago, I was talking to somebody about this. And my thought was, you know, it's sort of going to depend if somebody really is a contender is looking for a right-handed bat. You know, if some, a lot of times we know it's pitching is what everyone's looking for at the deadline. But if there's one, you know, contender out there, say the, you know, the Dodgers, Justin Turner hasn't, you know, fully been, isn't fully healthy or they're having trouble with that. Maybe they need to fill in that spot. It's kind of going to depend to some degree on the luck of the draw on who actually needs something like that or if a contender needs something like that.
Yeah, and you know, I would put the Cubs in there because, I don't know, I just think Addison Russell's kind of overrated. And maybe at the deadline, the Cubs decide they would like to shake up their team a little bit, you know, perhaps trade Russell as part of the deal, you know, attach a prospect or two and maybe get a head start on negotiating a long-term deal with Machado because I would expect them to be in the conversation come winter if he doesn't sign an extension with the Orioles. So, you know, maybe something like that is on the table. I believe that was even rumored at one point this winter that the Cubs and Orioles were talking about a Machado-Russell deal. So that one might not be dead. I don't know. But that would be my expectation, too, that it kind of depends on the market and it depends on where the Orioles are because I don't think you're going to see Dan Duquette just kind of give up if they're within shouting distance of a wild card spot. I think they're going to ride this thing out to the end unless they just absolutely cannot justify it.
Yeah, and this is something I've talked about on the podcast too, but it's like the Orioles' tendency under the you know the Duquette Showalter administration has been to do well in the first half of the season and then collapse later in the season a little bit. So like last year, you know, they were sort of in the wild card race up till September and then had a horrible September. So that's kind of my fear is that they're hovering around 500 at the All-Star break, 2.5 games out of the second wild card spot or something.
Yeah.
And they keep everybody and then things just go south rapidly after that and they get nothing for it. But that would seem to me to be the most Orioles thing ever if that happened.
Yeah, that's literally the worst case scenario right there. And I kind of hope it doesn't happen for their sake because, boy, that would be a little bit of a depressing turn to things if then, you know, Showalter and or Duquette leave and so does Machado, so does Jones, so does Britton and some of the other names. And then they're kind of left with this weird roster that's, you know, saddled with a couple of decent sized to big contracts and then, you know, no real franchise player and probably, I don't know, maybe a rookie manager, rookie GM, something like that. Because, you know, last time the Orioles tried filling their GM position, it turned into a bit of a struggle to find a candidate willing to work under Angelos. So I don't know if that would still be the case, but it wouldn't surprise me if it was. And I guess I'm interested to see how that works out, too, because, you know, Duquette and Showalter have had those there have been murmurs about a behind-the-scenes power struggle. And I wonder if there's any chance at all that both return or if Angelos is going to end up choosing between them because, you know, Showalter has supposedly made power plays in the past and Duquette obviously wanted out for that Blue Jays job a few years ago. So I'm really interested to see where this team goes over the next year, not just for on the field purposes, because, you know, those are kind of obvious. The off the field purposes are also really interesting. And I want to see how that shapes what they do over the next 12 to 18 months.
Well, yeah, I'll just tell you my opinion is that I'd be shocked if Dan Duquette is back. The consensus among Orioles people seems to be that Brady Anderson will likely end up in the GM role or whatever. You know,
that makes
I think
sense.
Technically it's like executive vice president of baseball operations or something. I don't think Duquette is technically a GM, but in that role, it seems like Brady Anderson has sort of been taking on more and more of that role in recent years anyway. I wouldn't necessarily be surprised if Buck Showalter comes back, but I wouldn't be surprised if he leaves either. So I think to me it's like it's about 50-50 on him, and it's probably extremely unlikely Duquette is back. That's at least my take on it.
No, that makes sense. And I'm trying to think of an obvious landing spot for Showalter, because I felt like Philadelphia was the obvious spot before they went out and hired Kapler due to the ties there and, you know, him taking over a team that could be on the rise pretty quickly. And you still have Joe Girardi out there. So even if the Cardinals were to move on from Matheny, would they want Showalter? Would Showalter want that situation? Or would they go with Girardi? Or would they go, you know, off the board? And I don't know. I know this is way, way off the map for what we're supposed to be talking about here, but it's interesting. There's a lot of interesting dynamics that are going to stem from this Orioles team.
Yeah, and I think the other possibility is that Buck Showalter at his age just decides he wants to retire. I mean, that wouldn't shock me at this point, whether he wants to go to another team and start over again. I don't know. I mean, these managers seem to want to stay around forever in a lot of cases. It gets in their blood. So, again, I wouldn't be surprised. And somebody you would think would be interested in him given his track record. But who knows? Like I said, that's a little far afield from the 2018 Orioles, but it's certainly something we're going to be talking about within the next year.
Yeah, and I really wish the guy could win a ring as a manager because, you know, he's, again, I think very highly of him. And, you know, I think his legacy kind of speaks for itself. It seems like everywhere he goes, he finds a way to win or position them where they're right on the cusp of winning. So it would be nice to see him win a ring. Probably not going to happen this year in Baltimore, but maybe next year somewhere else, maybe in a couple years in Baltimore. I don't really know, but that's something I would like to see happen at some point or another.
Yeah, I agree. And I think Orioles fans, for the most part, are big Buck Showalter fans. People have been very happy with him, especially considering the crew of nobodies we had for years before him.
Right.
There was a big gap between, say, Davey Johnson and Buck Showalter of a lot of managers who weren't very good. And most of them, you've probably forgotten their name by this point. All right. Well, RJ, thank you so much for joining us today. I really appreciate it.
Of course. Anytime. Thanks for having me.
And that's going to do it for another edition of Locked On Orioles. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.